If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam Podcast. Here in Inside the Ropes, my name is Kenny McIntosh, and I am joined, as always, by the man who wrote Power Slam and gave a lot of UK fans a chance to read the behind-the-scenes happenings in pro wrestling, and now we talk about it on the podcast. It is Finlay Martin. Hi, Finn. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Kenny. How's yourself?
Oh, I'm a bit shite, to be honest with you. I've got another fucking heating issue going on. I think there's more regularity and impact rating than there is in my heating. there we are again. But to combat that, we are doing an Inside the Ropes show with Kevin Owens in Glasgow on March 20th, 3 weeks this Friday. So that's very exciting and a lot of work in a very short space of time to put that together, but very excited about it.
Tickets are now on sale, right, Kenny?
Tickets are on sale. Plenty have gone out the shelves, so there are plenty left. We do anticipate the combo VIPs are probably going to be gone sooner rather than later. So if you do want an autograph from KO, we would recommend getting that done on payday later on this week. And if not, there's photo VIP tickets available, or there's just general admission if you want to come and hear him talk. Talk Owens talk, as people have said online. So should be pretty exciting. He's an interesting guest, and I think he'll be a guy who people want to hear what he's got to say.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, really good timing in the run-up to WrestleMania. So Elimination Chamber will have happened prior to the show, of course, but it's just before WrestleMania, just when everything's peaking. Seems to me that do you think they're going to prolong the Owens-Rollins feud to WrestleMania? Or do you think they're going to have a match at Elimination Chamber? What do you think?
I feel like they are going to prolong it to WrestleMania. I mean, because the thing, next Monday is actually the go-home show for Elimination Chamber.
Yes.
Which I think they'll either do one or two things. They'll either give us the Rollins-Owens match at Elimination Chamber, and then maybe at WrestleMania it's Buddy Murphy and Rollins defend the tag titles against Owens and somebody else. I mentioned on my fantasy WrestleMania card with Sondra that I'd maybe like to see Daniel Bryan be the guy to team with Owens in that match, because there's nothing else for him to do at WrestleMania that I can think of. But I think they'll either do that or they'll keep it off until WrestleMania and do the big one-on-one match.
Yeah, I mean, they've spent a long time on this. There was another quite interesting chapter on Raw this week, at the very end of the show, which we'll get to later. As we know, at Super Showdown, it's going to be Rollins and Murphy versus the Street Profits. It does feel like, old Rollins does feel like a WrestleMania match. So, yeah, the timing of the show just before that will be just about perfect, I would have thought.
Just about perfect. So so there's that. What else has been happening? You actually had a phenomenal interview with Jim Ross, written interview that's gone up on Patreon that people should definitely check out at patreon.com/insidetheropes. 4 pages, Finn.
4 pages. It's a beast of an interview. Yeah, we talked about the reasons why he left WWE, and how he notified Vince McMahon and what Vince McMahon's reaction was, what he thinks about AEW so far, what it's doing well, what he thinks will be done better or differently. We also talked about Jim Cornette and whether or not he's spoken to Jim Cornette about AEW. So that was quite an interesting exchange there. Also talked a little bit about his autobiography, part two of his autobiography, which is released at the end of March. So yeah, check that out. Yeah, there was lots of information in there. Lots of meat to that story, I think. Yeah, really good interview. Hopefully people will enjoy it as much as I enjoy it up.
So there's lots to discuss this week, but I thought we should open up with a news piece that was in originally the Wrestling Observer newsletter last week, and it's kind of been doing the rounds online, which is something that I know Vince McMahon had talked about in the earnings call, that WWE are in talks with ESPN Plus and a few other over-the-top streaming providers to essentially sell the rights to air certain pay-per-views. One would assume that would mean WrestleMania and SummerSlam, maybe Royal Rumble as well, and Survivor Series. So I guess my question to you is, what do you think, if they do this, is this a good move for the company? Is it not? How do you think it will affect the network numbers or not? What do you make of the story?
This was a big part of the earnings report, the full year earnings report, and the conference call, of course, press conference. We've been talking about this. What I took from it was they were looking into the idea of selling their content, presumably the pay-per-views, to other streaming services, but not, there wouldn't be an exclusivity here. So they would still be on the WWE network. That's what I took from it. And I think when people first saw this story, they're thinking, oh, you know, this is going to be death for the network. Everyone's going to be unsubscribing, you know, there'll be an exodus of people leaving WWE. I mean, especially if they were to strike a deal with Netflix, because, I mean, there's obviously massive amounts of crossover of people who are subscribers to Netflix and subscribers to the WWE network. So if all the WWE pay-per-views became the exclusive property of Netflix, you would have, I would have thought, hundreds of thousands of people unsubscribing from the network. So my way of looking at it is that Vince isn't going to do that. Why would he do that? Because the pay-per-views, to me, and I think to you as well, Kenny, the pay-per-views are the number one selling point of the WWE network. I agree with that.
Yeah, no, I think they are. I do think that they could get away with just taking WrestleMania off, because I think if you kept everything but that, which was the original plan, you could get away with that. But I mean, the thing is, they're not making anywhere near as much money as they had projected they were going to with the network. I don't know how numbers are going to go up because they have so much stuff that there's not really any impetus for, like. And we've talked about this before. Like we've talked to people who work regular jobs and they have no time to watch all the shows that they watch. I mean, we watch most of the stuff because we, you know, this is our main source of income. You know, is watching wrestling and either talking about it or doing interviews about it or whatever. So, but if you have a 9-to-5 job, how much can you watch? And then do you really need to watch more? So some people, and there's probably a lot of people who are just quite happy to dip in and out of the network whenever there's a pay-per-view that interests them, or maybe they go around to a pal's house who's got the network, or maybe they watch it on, you know, less than legal means, and maybe they just watch, you know, the TV shows instead.
Yeah, I mean, I do understand what you're saying there. I mean, yeah, the whole thing of the network in the, originally when it was launched in February of 14, so it was 6 years in now, aren't we? Was it
February 2014. I think yesterday was the 6 year anniversary.
Yes. So yeah, the original plan was that WrestleMania would stay on pay-per-view because it generated so much revenue for WWE from pay-per-view, and of course for the cable companies and satellite providers and everything like that. And then not enough people were subscribing to the network, so they had to then move WrestleMania onto the network as well. So that was just because there was the reaction internally from WWE that they were projecting that they were going to be doing, you know, they would have a million subscribers really quickly. And then first estimate of subscribers was like less than 700,000 or something like that. I don't even think they'd hit a million until the following year. I think that's right. Because I remember when Vince made that appearance on Steve Austin's podcast, Steve Austin kind of poked fun at him, the network subscriber numbers, and Vince was seething. So WWE really felt like it had to do this, the numbers up, because it was becoming a little bit of an embarrassment. And they'd had these projections of, oh yeah, we were going to have, like, you know, all these subscribers, you know, millions as in plural. And obviously they've never hit that point. I mean, I think they have hit 2 million at like WrestleMania time, when you have all the people who subscribe for the night and then unsubscribe like the next week. But they've never come close to 2 million in terms of people who were, you know, in terms of, you know, people who were subscribing month in and month out. So I think WWE network has reached its ceiling in terms of how many subscribers it's to attain, unless it can then go through another boom period, get all these people over, you know, become huge again, start drawing, you know, 3 million, 4 million plus for Raw and SmackDown, you know, and just have another huge boom. And I don't know whether that's possible either, but I think it's worth pointing out that when I first started writing about wrestling in 1992, it was doom and gloom time. And everybody was predicting back then that it was over and that it was never going to come back up. Oh, it's never going to be like it was in 1987 or 1988. Forget it. It's never going to come back up. And then obviously it did later that decade. So to rule out that it will never boom again, there'll never be another huge boom period for wrestling, I mean, I just think, how can you say that? You know, no one can say that with any certainty because no one knows what's going to happen next.
Yeah, you're right. You can't really predict whether it's going to get big or not. I mean, but it is harder now because there's so much choice of like entertainment. That's the only thing that I think makes it harder. But then, you know, we talked about it before that WWE only let their guys get popular enough and then kind of put the kibosh on it. They don't want somebody becoming Brock Lesnar level again. They don't want someone becoming a Steve Austin level again. So I think that, and with their kind of like hesitance to have anybody ever get to a point where they could walk out like a Rock or Austin or Hogan or Lesnar, their reluctance to do that, and the fact that, you know, I mean, we sit here on February the 25th, 2020, Finn. I still have The Wire on my list of things to watch in 2020 because there's so many things that, like, how do you make room? Like, I think I stopped watching The Walking Dead in, like, season 4 or 5 and I've just never been able to go back. I used to watch The Blacklist, which is a great kind of crime show thriller thing with James Spader. Stopped watching that about 3 seasons ago. Can't remember where I stopped, so trying to pick that up again is impossible. So I think because there's so much stuff, I mean, you really have to be a wrestling nut to watch all the stuff that there is. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm just to throw out a devil's advocate, because you, I always love when he turns up to a party. But
so do I.
But the idea, I do think there is something that if they were to sell the rights to WrestleMania, for example, like say they were to go, okay, we're going to sell the rights to WrestleMania to Netflix or Fox or whatever, and then it'll go in the WWE network in 7 days, say, for example. Like, I think you've got a lot of people who want to watch WrestleMania live, and then in turn, WWE will probably put more effort into making sure that it's a show, because they kind of have to sell the show in a way that they haven't had to in a while. Because before, they're hoping they'll get more network subscriptions, but, you know, if they put it on an over-the-top service, I assume the deal will be, I don't know if it'll be a flat fee, or if it would be if this many people watch, you get this much money. But you would think there's an impetus for them to make it as big as possible. And with that in mind, this year's WrestleMania, we should follow up with talking about John Cena's match with Elias. Finn has been changed. Can you believe they're taking this away from us? Somebody in WWE thought John Cena versus Elias is not a WrestleMania match. I demand answers.
Who from? From me or from WWE?
From you. Who's smoking crack and couldn't see the potential of that dream match of Elias and John Cena?
Well, maybe that was just a conversation someone had, or, well, we can put him with Elias because there's a story there and we don't have to try very hard. Maybe that was just a conversation that then somebody reported and said, yes, this is going to happen. And there was never any intention of it happening.
Well, I mean, so because now the whole conversation, which kind of veers us nicely from the over-the-top thing to this, is that they are apparently changing the course of WrestleMania. It's not going to be Roman Reigns versus The Fiend.
Okay.
Plans have changed. John Cena's no longer wrestling Elias. So that kind of fits in with the conversation we had before about Roman Reigns, Goldberg, Cena, and The Fiend, and different stuff happening. What's your take on all the changes, and do you think that moving away from Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt is the right decision or not?
Well, I mean, we don't know whether anything has changed. I mean, these were just ideas that were probably scribbled down on a piece of paper somewhere, or, you know, Vince in one of his, you know, erratic fits of something, the reverse of creativity, had just changed his mind. So, I mean, I guess we'll have some idea on Friday when Cena turns up on SmackDown as to what he's going to do. I mean, to me, the idea of Cena versus Elias, it actually did make sense to me, not as a WrestleMania match.
Oh, Finn.
But just, right, Cena's an actor, right? We know this. We've talked about this at length. He's surely not going to put himself in a position he could get injured. You know, he doesn't want to turn up at the Fast 9 premieres with his leg in a cast. You know what I mean? I mean, that's not going to look it. So, I mean, in all seriousness, does he really want to put himself in that position after The Rock was told specifically by Michael Bay and others? We know this from all sorts of things were said behind the scenes as well to Rock about not putting himself in a position which could jeopardize his movie career, which could delay schedules, could screw things up. Huge money at stake here. I mean, why really is Cena coming back for WrestleMania anyway? He might appear on Raw the next night, but he isn't going to be there on the Raw 8 days after WrestleMania. He's not going to be part of this process throughout April and May and June and the rest of the year. So I don't really care what he does at WrestleMania. To me, he's like somebody who's coming back for nostalgia purposes to appease people. And, oh, that's brilliant. Let's buy his merchandise. And, oh, wasn't wrestling brilliant back in 2009 when Cena was on top? Well, actually, no, it wasn't. But, I mean, that's what Cena's there for, isn't it? It's a nostalgia kick. So, but to me, the idea of putting him in there in a big match, particularly against Goldberg, surely that's not going to happen because of the potential injury risk. I can't see Cena put himself in that position. Okay, he could have a match with The Fiend, Bray Wyatt. He's probably going to be all right in that. I'm not really looking forward to that match. It's not something I really need to see. But there again, who else is The Fiend going to wrestle? I mean, it's going to be interesting to have him Thursday at Super Showdown, because the whole setup with Goldberg, just no selling The Fiend and just really just undoing all that good work they've been doing for the last 10 months, has just made me never want to see Goldberg ever again in wrestling. And Cena is a guy, we know this, Kenny, who has a track record for doing exactly the same thing with full-time performers, basically making them look like crap. So, you know, okay, if he comes back and he puts The Fiend over, it's like, yay, Cena's put this guy over. But what does that really mean? Cena's not a full-timer anymore. He's not even really a wrestler. He's an actor. So, I mean, I'm not excited about Cena's participation in WrestleMania. And in many ways, Cena Elias, to me, was the perfect WrestleMania match for him. Not because it would have been a good match. Well, you know, it's Cena. Not because it would have been a huge match or one that's going to get people excited. But it's just going to tick a box for, you know, it's going to tick that nostalgia box. He can come in. Elias has gone as far as he's going to go. This is it. He's a musical interlude. Doesn't matter how quickly he loses to Cena. Doesn't matter at all. It's a safe match for Cena to have. He can just do a few things. He's not going to suffer an injury. It's going to appease his agents, his management company, all the potential studios and producers and directors that he might work with and actors. You know, it's a safe proposition for Cena. So to me, it made sense for Cena based on where he is now. That's my take on it.
I'm just in disbelief. I couldn't disagree more on that one, unfortunately, because Elias and John Cena is just the biggest yawn fest that I could ever imagine. And to me, if Cena's going to come back and do something, now maybe I'm giving him too much credit here. Maybe I am, and you can rip me on the post-WrestleMania podcast. But to me, he's coming back because he knows how shit his last couple of appearances and years have been in WWE, and he doesn't want to be remembered as the guy who threw a shite punch in Australia, or the guy who, you know, got squashed by Undertaker in 3 minutes in New Orleans. Like, he wants to do something else. And I think the reason the Fiend thing works so well is because the biggest match that, well, the two biggest matches that Bray Wyatt lost that he shouldn't have lost was the WrestleMania match to John Cena and the WrestleMania match to The Undertaker. And if Bray Wyatt can right one of those wrongs, I think that's very valuable to his character. And it's very valuable that he can have, you know, the John Cena with the two eyes put through it on his wall. And it's a legitimate person he's beat. It's not a Jerry Lawler who he's done a mandible claw to. It's a big name. And to me, you know, especially if you talk about him being an actor and not wanting to do a lot, the match with The Fiend could be more character-based and would mean he wouldn't have to do as many things. So I think it would be just as safe a match as the Elias one. And I think if you're going to have John Cena involved, have him involved in something with somebody that matters. Because to me, John Cena and Elias, you're going to go to the toilet. Nobody cares. Like, nobody... Whereas I do feel that there's a large portion of the audience who would care about The Fiend and John Cena.
Well, I don't. I don't care about it. I'm still recovering from the hype 2 years ago for the Undertaker match. You know, going, oh, it's going to be brilliant, it's going to be this. And then it was just absolute garbage. And Cena looked atrocious in it.
Exactly. And that's why I think he wants to right that wrong. He knows that was terrible. It's not like he's sitting there going, oh, you know that that five-star classic we put on at WrestleMania? He knows. And Undertaker couldn't fucking do anything. So I do think that Cena wants to do something. The interesting thing was, I think it was WrestleVotes had written that Cena wants to do a certain thing at WrestleMania. And I just can't believe that John Cena went, do you know what I want to do at WrestleMania? I want to face Elias. I just don't buy that that's what he said. Now, I mean, well, here's another question then. If the four guys that are in question of, like, what are they going to do and what combination of them are we going to see between Goldberg, Roman, and Wyatt, if Cena was going to face one of those three, who would be the most bearable of those three for you to see Cena face?
Well, I don't think he's going to go in there with Goldberg because of the injury risk.
Can you imagine? Jesus.
It's just not, that's just not going to happen. We've already seen Roman Reigns. We've never seen Cena versus Fiend. So of the three, then Fiend is preferable. And it has the story, of course, with Cena doing stuff with Wyatt back in 2014. But to me, it's like, you look at what Cena's done in WWE over the last few years, and it's all been sort of frivolous stuff. It's all been quick. It's been no injury risk. It's like, he's going in there. He's just sort of turning up to have a bit of fun. You know, I guess lend WWE a hand and then get on with his full-time job. So to me, I'm not excited about Cena's participation in the show. I'm more interested in talking about the people who are up and coming and the people who are going to be around 8 days after WrestleMania than Cena. I'm not interested. I mean, I remember 2 years ago that we had to listen to the whole hype for the Undertaker feud was excruciating, absolutely excruciating. And I was, oh, it's going to be brilliant. It's going to be this, it's going to be that. And it was just, we know it was really short. And Cena's performance in the match was dreadful. It was just embarrassing. And the stuff he did last year, I think, with Elias was actually his best WrestleMania performance in a long time. Because he came out there. It was not all about nostalgia. That scene now is a nostalgia act. He came out there, did the Dr. Thugonomics thing, had some fun, did the raps. People really enjoyed seeing him. It was against Elias, wasn't it, last year?
It was, yeah. He interrupted right. Elias as the Doctor of Thugonomics.
Absolutely, yeah. So then, and then he just gave Elias the attitude adjustment, didn't he? And that was it. And then he left to the sound of cheers, the unfamiliar sound of cheers. He was over. So to me, that's what Cena's role is now. So the idea of seeing him there in a big program with a full-timer, it's not appealing to me at all. I've moved on. I want to see people who are in the 20s and the 30s get the big matches at WrestleMania, so we're not constantly reliant on these part-timers coming in, taking these big spots. And then, you know, we were talking earlier about WWE Network's numbers not being as high as WWE would like them to be. This is why, because we haven't got this investment in new people and making them stars. We've got this reliance on old timers like Cena who are coming in for one night. Then you have people, oh, let's watch WrestleMania. And then they won't watch it again for a year. So what does Cena really do for WWE? What is the point? It's all short term and transient and ineffective and doesn't cure the problems that we've been complaining about for years. It's just part of the problem, not the solution.
Is there any value in using older stars to put younger stars over? Or do you think it's past that stage too?
Well, I mean, there is. But I mean, to me, there is when the stars are there on a regular basis. Obviously, there is with Lesnar. Lesnar is going to put Drew McIntyre over at WrestleMania, and I think that will be very beneficial for Drew McIntyre. I don't know whether he's going to make it as a top guy, because a lot of it is dependent on who McIntyre then faces in the post-WrestleMania season. And I'm not sure who they've got ready. Again, because they're not getting people ready, because they're using people like Cena and Goldberg and making telling us that they're bigger stars than the regulars. So, I mean, that's the problem for Drew in the post-WrestleMania season. Who does he face? Who does it maybe faces Seth Rollins? It's not that enthralling. Probably will be Seth Rollins. But yeah, there's absolutely value in someone like Brock Lesnar, who's a serious, okay, he's a part-timer, but he's a wrestler and that's his main job. You know, he's a pro wrestler. He's a serious pro wrestler. We can believe in him. We know that this is what he does. Now he's, you know, knocked the MMA career on the head, which is, to me, is really good for him and really good for WWE as well, and really good for the message that he's sending, that this is what he does and this is his top priority. So yes, there absolutely is value in veterans putting over younger stars if they are serious wrestlers. If they are actors just dropping in for a payday to have a laugh, not really taking it that seriously, because in Cena's defense, how can he? Because his full-time job is acting now. You know, this is the whole thing about it, is that I have no, the whole Elias and Cena thing, I have no objection to that at all. I mean, maybe Cena and The Fiend can be a hit, and maybe it can work. You know, and if that's the direction they choose to go in, I will say that it will have my full support if that's the way they're going. You know, if that's what they want to do, then I hope they can make a success out of it and that The Fiend can come out of that match a bigger star than he went into it. So I hope it does work out. And maybe that's what they will do, because, you know, we've got this Goldberg Fiend match on Thursday at Super Showdown. It's if Goldberg wins that, Fiend's in big trouble after that angle on SmackDown last week. He really is. But at the same time, it's hard for me to believe that Goldberg would come back to put The Fiend over. So I'm having a hard time working out how this match is going to play out.
I'm the same. Well, we'll talk about SmackDown in just a second. Before we go into SmackDown and Raw and kind of the final build to Super Showdown, I did want to ask you about, obviously, AEW have got their big pay-per-view coming up this weekend, Revolution, from Chicago. They've basically got all but the full card announced. There's obviously the main event is going to be Chris Jericho defending the AEW World title against Jon Moxley. We're going to have MJF versus Cody. We're going to have the tag titles on the line with Omega and Paige defending against the Young Bucks. Dustin Rhodes against Jake Hager. Darby Allin against Sammy Guevara. They're both kind of revenge matches for the babyfaces. And then we have Nyla Rose defending the AEW Women's title against Chris Statlander. What do you think of that as a card? How do you think they've built it? What intrigues you? What do you think they've done well? How do you feel going into it?
I mean, I'm pretty much up to date on you. In fact, I am up to date on my AEW. I think they've done a good job on the Cody and Chris Jericho match. Cody and MJF match. I think they've done a good job on the Chris Jericho and John Moxley match. I'm looking forward to that. The rest of the card, you know, it's not really that appealing to me. I mean, we do have the, as you say, the revenge matches. You know, I've got to tell you, I'm not really that excited about the show, to be honest with you, Kenny. I mean, I think Jericho versus Moxley, I still feel like there was a lot they could have, if had Moxley joined the team, I still feel like we were shortchanged on the storyline there. There was so much fun to be had Moxley become, you know, joined up with the Inner Circle. I just think there was so much fun to be had there, but I guess maybe they didn't have time to do that. I think that can be a good match. I think Jericho needs to retain the title still. I think he's more effective as champion than he would be as an ex-champion. It doesn't seem like the time to me for him to lose the belt yet. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm the same. Well, let's actually go through some predictions for the card since we're chatting about it. So Nyla Rose defending against Chris Statlander. It doesn't feel to me like it's anywhere near the time to take the belt off Nyla, so no. I think she'd retain here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Statlander's one of those. I mean, she's not bad in the ring. I think a ring gear kind of looks second rate. She needs to do something with that character. We still don't really know who she is. She's one of the people who could be a star in this division, but they need to do a lot of work on it.
Yeah, I think she's definitely got potential. And I assume that Nyla will go on to face Big Swole after this. We've got Darby Allin, who is yet to win a big singles match against Sammy Guevara. So I feel like this is going to be his time where he's going to finally get his win. And I think they've done a pretty good job of building this match, because when he returned this past week in AEW, it did feel like a big thing. And the idea that he's now doing the cue cards to Sammy, partially because he can't speak because of his vocal cords being hurt by the skateboard incident, I think there's all kind of nice little nuggets there of a story. And I think that Darby Allin getting the win here feels like it's been fairly well built. So I assume that's where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, when he did return on the skateboard, people did react very favourably to him. There was a few sort of moments in there with Jeff Cobb just standing around waiting for his moment to do something. I mean, that just looked like fake wrestling to me. And it was just like, that was a bit naff, really. But yeah, I mean, Darby Allin is definitely over. The fans are into him. And I can't imagine for a moment he's going to lose this match. I just can't imagine for a moment that Sammy Guevara is, Darby Allin's on a revenge mission. You know, it's retribution time. And he starts chain of command. He's starting at the bottom with Sammy Guevara. So yeah, Darby's going over in that match for sure.
And then we've got Dustin Rhodes, the old grizzled veteran, taking on Jericho's bitch, Jake Hager.
Jake Hager. I mean, this is Hager's first match in AEW, right?
Yeah, he debuted at the end of the October 2nd debut show in Washington, I think it was, or Boston. Anyway, the initial show they had, he debuted at the end of that. They've done a long build of having him not get in the ring, and I think, you know, I think that they've kind of got something to prove here, these guys, to have a good match, to show that, you know, Dustin's got to show that the Cody match last year wasn't a fluke, that he can really still go. I mean, he has proved on TV he can still kind of go, but Hager's not been in the ring, so, and I assume Hager's going to have a slightly different style now, because he's going to kind of have to have a bit of MMA in his gimmick.
Yeah, you would have thought so. I mean, I think it's going to be a convincing victory for Jake Hager. I mean, it has to be. You know, the long-term plan has to be him getting over as this killer heel who will then turn babyface and challenge Chris Jericho somewhere down the line for the title.
Diesel and Shawn, isn't it?
Yeah, that just seems like the direction of travel to me. And that, I mean, I think Jake Hager is somebody that people are already, they're already itching to cheer. And I think that can work really well, that feud. And Jericho's, he knows how to make this work. And I think by the time they get to that, hopefully later in the year, I think Jake Hager has a real shot of being a top babyface in this company. I'm not saying future champ, but I think he can be a very effective challenger. So I'm predicting that Jake Hager is going to score a convincing win over Dustin. But yeah, hopefully they'll have a good match, because Dustin hasn't really done. I mean, he's done quite a lot in AEW since the match with Cody last year. But I think he needs a big moment, I think, at the pay-per-view this weekend.
Yeah, he's been kind of he's done a lot that hasn't really been in ring. He's been kind of around a lot of Cody stuff and things. And he did have a good match with Sammy Guevara recently on TV. But yeah, he needs a big moment and a big match. I also think that anybody who... Because the thing is, when they brought in Jake Hager, I think we were kind of like, okay, Jack Swagger's an odd choice to bring in. But like, in actuality, he has really done a great job at the kind of subtleties of whenever he's around. And he'll do little things to the camera, or he'll flex here and there, and he'll do different little things that kind of make you laugh and you remember him. And I think that's a clever thing that he's done. He's not just been the kind of stoic bodyguard guy who never, you know, face never moves. He's really developed a kind of little bit of a nuance, which I didn't think he had in him. So I hope that he goes on to kind of keep proving me wrong and proving that he, like you were saying, that he can become a top guy in the company, because he's got a lot of doubters because of his swagger run. And I just want, when he has this match, to really see no remnants of the All-American American. Like, that guy's gone. I know Jericho said it in a promo, like, that guy should be gone. We should have a new serious guy in the ring who can fight. So I think Hager will get the win.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot more to him than we've seen from him in big time wrestling. Jake Hager stroke Jack Swagger. There's a lot more going on there. It's not like a Vladimir Kozlov, is he? You know what I mean? Who's just like this, you know, plank who just doesn't really have the ability to express anything. And I think there's a lot going on there. And, you know, Jack Swagger to me was a guy. I remember putting him on the cover of Power Slam. I think it was issue 191. And that issue did terrible. They just made him champion. And I was like, I've been banging on for years, just as I was going on about just earlier, about how they need to invest in new stars and not part-timers like John Cena and give someone a chance. And that's how you get new stars over and create a new boom period. I have been saying this for a long time. So I thought, right, that's it, Philly. You've got to practice what you preach. You've got to put your money where your mouth is. You've got to put a new guy on the front cover of Power Slam. Did it with Swagger when they made him champ. And then they gave up on him immediately, and that issue did really badly. So that personally cost me quite a lot of money, and in hindsight was a huge error.
So what you're really saying is John Cena should win the title this year's WrestleMania.
Well, in hindsight, it was an error because WWE didn't go all the way with Jack Swagger. They kind of gave up on him right after he won the title, if you remember. It was just like... Really, what happened?
Well, it's the wrestling equivalent of, like, he's went on two dates with this girl and now he's getting married to her. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. They've just started dating. What are you doing? And he had just kind of become a character that people were recognizing, and immediately was given the title. I mean, people who were not watching at the time will not remember when Jack Swagger was going to win Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 26. That he couldn't unclip the briefcase for about 30 seconds, and they've edited it out of the network. But, like, if you can find it, do you remember that?
Yeah. This was 2010, wasn't it?
Yeah. My God. And it felt, I was in the stadium. It felt like forever. And you could see the guys, like, because, like, you know, if you're watching a Money in the Bank match live, you're always kind of looking at the other guys as well, and you can see if there's nobody kind of going for the wrestler that they're going to win. And it went on for so long that you were like, did somebody miss their cue? Like, what's happening? And then, you know, and then he won the title on the following SmackDown, where he powerbombed Chris Jericho out of his own shoe.
Yes.
You know, but there is kind of a nice full circle thing that now he's with Jericho. But yeah, anyway, point is, Jake Hager, he wasn't ready then, and he is ready now for a more prominent position, and AEW seemed to be getting him there. So
yeah, I mean, hopefully. I mean, my whole idea about then 2010 was there wasn't really that many other candidates for the cover that month, as I recall, and I had a photo that I thought would work. And I just thought, you know, they've made this guy champ. You know, he's won Money in the Bank. As you say, he won the title down taping, which would have been 2 days later about then. And it's like, yeah, they're going to really try with this guy. Let's get him on the cover. Let's try and capitalize on this groundswell of support that's sure to come for Jack Swagger. And he just dropped off a cliff. And he was just, I look back on it and you think, you know what, my whole reasoning for doing that came from a good place. It was like, right, I'm going to try with this new guy. I'm going to show that Power Slam's backing him, because I thought it was a real talent there. Never really gave him a chance to become the star that I thought he might become back then. And then, you know, he lost the title later in the year. They gave up on him. And it's like he's still got that stigma. So as you say, we're now here, we are 10 years later. Hard to believe it. It's, you know, 10 years since that happened. He still looks so young. And it still looks to me like he could be that guy that I thought he was going to be in 2010, and, you know, hopefully AEW will get it right where WWE got it so wrong.
Then we've got the tag title match with the Bucks against Omega and Paige. This is kind of the one match that I really think could go well. One of two matches that I think really could go either way. If they're going to rush the Omega Hangman Page split, they could have the Young Bucks win, or they could have them retain, but maybe under, like, Hangman Page cheating purposes. So I can't really call this one. Who do you think is going to win this match and why?
Well, I mean, the Young Bucks won the Tag Team Battle Royal, didn't they, on the February 9th Dynamite from Atlanta. It sort of feels like, is it time to split up Kenny and Hangman Page? They do make a good tag team, and it does seem like mileage left yet in these two as champions. It seems like there's so much more they could do as champs. And if you take the title off them, presumably over the end of the team, and what will happen then? Will they feud? Doesn't, because they were sort of not getting along, and then they've sort of, that's been torn down, hasn't it? The falling out and everything. But actually, what happened? We had the Lucha Brothers versus Kenny and Paige on last week's Dynamite, didn't we? And Omega and Paige, they won the match, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And earlier in the episode, Bucks had won the Battle Royal, so that sets us up for the tag title match.
That's right. So it sort of feels like it's time for the Bucks to win the title because they've had a few losses. But if they do, what's going to happen to Omega and Paige? And it feels to me like the story together as a unit hasn't ended yet. And that needs to continue. And it almost seems to, like, they need to be at breaking point to me before they lose the title. And then they can have their feud. And it doesn't feel like they're at that point yet. Does it feel like it's at that point yet to you, Kenny?
No. It doesn't really. I mean, I was thinking about this yesterday, actually, and I wanted to bring it up. I think one of the big shockers for me has been how much I've kind of turned completely on Hangman Page. Because I kind of, I remember being in Vegas and in Chicago when he lost his big matches to, he lost to Jericho All Out.
Yeah.
And who did he lose to Double or Nothing? Was it Pac? No, because Pac wasn't there. I'm sure he lost to Double or Nothing. I'll bring it up here. But after he'd lost those matches, he came into the press room to kind of do an interview. And both times he was there, I just kind of felt like he didn't really give us anything. And I kind of was like, is this guy going to be a big star in AEW? Because he doesn't seem to have the personality as much as you'd hope. He actually won the Battle Royal, sorry, at Double or Nothing. And then he lost at All Out to... I think he lost it Full Gear as well. But the point is, ever since he's been in this team with Kenny Omega, and they've had him kind of, he was on the losing streak, and then he left the Elite and all that kind of stuff, I think he's become a far more interesting character. And now with this kind of him being the beer-drinking guy who doesn't really give a shit, I think he's actually 10 times more interesting than Kenny Omega.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, if the original plan, which maybe it was the original plan, was to have Paige turn on Omega as a heel, I think that they've smartly kind of seen that that's not the way this is going to go, and that people actually are really getting behind Hangman Page, and this gimmick now is exactly what he should be doing. And I think they've kind of struck onto gold with Page, because he is somebody that I think the fans are getting behind. He's not an Austin ripoff, but he is somebody who drinks beer and it feels kind of organic. So I kind of want to see them keep going for a little while, and I actually think the best thing would be for Omega to turn on him eventually. Because if people are getting behind Paige for him being a bit of a rebel, and Omega's always trying to play by the rules, and that eventually pisses him off, that's the route I think would be far more fruitful for them than to try and have Paige turn, which I think would probably give you like the Becky Charlotte effect that happened at SummerSlam 2018.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it seems to me like Hangman Page was somebody who was going to turn heel, and that was what they were setting up. I mean, with him, refusing to allow the Bucks to tag in, being a glory hound, and it's all about him and an attention seeker and not a team player. It did feel, I mean, all the hallmarks were there. Here's a guy who's about to turn heel. I mean, it was very obvious. But fans have caught on to that, and they like that sort of rebellious spirit that he's got. So it's almost like a little bit, I mean, he's not an Austin clone, not for a moment. He's not seeking that, and I don't think people see him as that. But there is a little bit of that Austin there, you know, the rebel, the renegade, the guy who does what he wants, which is, let's face it, what a lot of pro wrestling characters, that's why we like them, because they do things that you can't do in the normal world. It's all larger than life, you know, and over the top. And that's, to many people, that's what pro wrestling is in a nutshell. So Hangman Page has sort of gotten over as a babyface by doing sort of anti-babyface things. He's almost like the anti-hero type figure. And there isn't, you know, when you think about it, there isn't that many of them in big time wrestling at the moment who are sort of ticking that box. And he is doing that. And I'm with you there. I think Kenny Omega is the one who needs to turn heel. And I think if he does, I think Paige can be a huge star, much bigger star than he is as a babyface. And I'm with you as well. And we're in agreement now after the Cena falling out earlier.
All is right with the world. I'd unfollowed you on Twitter, but I'm going to follow you again.
Fine, fantastic. that's my self-worth restored. we all measure it by the number of likes and followers we have, don't we?
That's the new dick size, how many likes you get.
So, I mean, yeah, Page to me is a guy. I mean, I was not a huge fan of him last year either. And I found some of his promos, particularly the one where he, I think it was prior to the Jericho match, where he was saying, oh, if I lose this, I'm back on the tobacco, on my parents' tobacco farm. And I just thought, that's pathetic. It was like pathetic babyface whining. Oh, I need this. Oh, you know, what'll happen to me if I don't win? Oh, you know, it's just like, that's like so 1980s. You know, you can't do that in 2020. And to me, I think in a nutshell, the reason it's working so well now is that he's not trying too hard and it kind of feels natural, doesn't feel forced, and it all sort of feels spontaneous, even though it isn't, but it kind of feels like it is.
Well, cause
that's working really well for it.
Well, because there's this element of, like, I think initially what they were trying to do was, like, have the Bucks and Omega kind of, you know, taking the beat off Paige and kind of like, God, what are you doing? Just focus. And I think in that, what they've kind of stumbled upon is this elevation of, like, I'm not saying that Kenny Omega is a sanctimonious prick, right? But what you can do is you can play up Omega's desire to be an artist and all that kind of stuff that he has and play it up to 100 and make him seem sanctimonious, even though he's not, which can then make Paige feel so much more of a relatable guy who's just a guy who cuts a couple of corners here and there, because we all do, and has a beer at the end of it when he's having fun. And then I think you've built a pretty big match. And I think Omega might feel like more of a star in this company as a big-time heel than he would as a big-time babyface, because I just don't think that the mainstream audience, the million people who are watching, relate to him anywhere near as much as they relate to Cody or Darby Allin or Hangman Page. And I just think that in going long-term, I just see him more on the heel side than I do in the babyface one.
Yeah, and I think we've also got to give AEW credit as well for recognising this and going with this by structuring the matches so that Hangman Page is getting the hot tags and he's coming in and he's getting the lion's share of the cheers. So they're going with the flow there. They're not swimming upstream on this one. They are going with the current. And Kenny Omega is kind of Hangman Page's setup man, and we've said this before, that neither of us ever thought this would be possible when AEW launched as a TV entity back in October. But this is what's happened, and you've got to give AEW a lot of credit here for being spontaneous and recognising what's happening and not fighting it, but instead going with it. And this was what WWF used to do so well back in the late 1990s. They would recognise the direction of travel of something or the mood of the public, and instead of trying to turn the audience and trying to make them like something that they didn't want to like, give the audience what they wanted. And I think AEW has definitely done that with Hangman Page. So, you know, congrats to him for that.
Yes, I think ultimately I'm going to say that Page and Omega retain. That's my gut.
I think it sort of feels like, you know, Young Bucks really haven't had that many big wins. I know they won the Battle Royal and everything, but Young Bucks have really... But to me, it would seem premature for Omega and Page to lose the tag team title this weekend.
So then we've got Cody and MJF. This is the other match that could kind of go either way. Cody's obviously, you know, done all the challenges that he had to do, the stipulations. He did the cage match with Wardlow, but he got the big win. Cut a really great off-air promo, actually, which they put on their YouTube and stuff. So Cody and MJF, what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think MJF's got to win. I mean, I know you could say Cody's jumped through all the hoops and everything to do all these, you know, he's had to satisfy all these stipulations, these requirements, in order for MJF to agree to face him at Revolution. But I mean, MJF, he needs to win this match. You could say, well, you know, because Cody, of course, lost to Chris Jericho, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Back at the last pay-per-view. So, I mean, Cody's established as, I think the top babyface in the company. I think most people would agree with that. So MJF is really in this position right now where we don't know whether he's really going to make it as a top guy. I mean, this is a huge test for him, this match with Cody. I think it's going to go down well. I think it's going to work. But to me, MJF needs to win, because if he doesn't...
Another Bray Wyatt at that point. Just another Rusev.
What does he say on Wednesday? What does he say on the post-pay-per-view episode of Dynamite? If he wins, he can go out there and gloat. I mean, you could might say, well, what's the point of that, Finlay? Because they've spent so long setting up this match, which they have. So would they really have another match? But then what they could do is they could actually then build up another match as a TV on TV, say 4 weeks down the line, to try and pop a rating and end the feud there. And Cody can win the second match. He can win that one. But I think MJF needs to win the first one. Very much like Wyatt and Cena, in that Cena was the... I mean, when they had their three pay-per-view match series, they had one at WrestleMania, Cena won that. Then they had a cage match, didn't they, at the following event?
Yeah, they had... Because Cena won the first one at WrestleMania, Wyatt won the second one, which wasn't pinfall.
No, and it was, and that was the one where they had the little kid come out, and Cena was like, I mean, his acting in that was just embarrassingly bad. I mean, it was just one of the worst matches just of the year. Just, oh, let's just, and so Cena lost that.
What do you think was a better acting performance, right? Like, you got to really think about it here. Meta, Daniel Day-Lewis shit in your head. Who was better? John Cena reacting to the child, or Hulk Hogan reacting to the twin referees and the plastic surgery?
Well, I think, I mean, I've got a soft spot for the Hulk Hogan's, you know, bad acting from the 80s. Also, really the terrible acting as well in the famous Randy Savage, you know, the main event match with the Twin Towers where they go backstage after Liz gets crushed. There was some pretty atrocious acting from Hogan backstage. But Randy Savage was such a maniac backstage that he more than compensated for it. But yeah, I much prefer Hogan to Cena. Hogan in 1988, that would have been, wouldn't it, with the twin referee?
I was just doing that for Callum Hogan, who I know is listening to this and having a seizure at his favourite John Cena being battered here so much. So the reason I did that, Callum, is because we have our nostalgia for Hogan and his bad acting, and you have your nostalgia for Cena's. So we all have something in the closet to have as a guilty pleasure.
We do. And then they had the Last Man Standing match, didn't they? I think it was it Backlash?
Then the third one Cena got... But the whole thing was, and I get this, this will probably tie in here, you know, AEW Revolution is a big pay-per-view. People will remember who won the first one.
Yes.
And that's the key, right? Cena won the first one, you remember the Cena one, you don't remember the rest. MJF has to win the first one. Learn from the mistakes of, you know, and the thing is, Cody was there through all these other things that happened, not just Cena, but everybody. You know, the swagger stuff, he was there through all that stuff. So really, he should be very sort of aware.
Mindful. He should be very mindful of this. Without a doubt, he should be recognizing this. And I'm convinced that MJF will win the match because he needs this win in order to enrich his character and advance his status in the pecking order, and so that he gets that big promo on the post pay-per-view episode of Dynamite where he can gloat about it, and then Cody can come out and they can then build to another match. I would think probably a TV match, but they could do it like maybe 4 weeks down the line. And if they build that up right, and you know, with another stipulation, I'm not sure, maybe they could do a match where the loser has to take 20 lashes or something like that, or a strap match, I don't know. But there's lots of stipulations that they could use. And in that, Cody can finally get his retribution. But by then, MJF will be established as a top guy. So, yeah, he's got to win.
Yeah, and I think Cody's not the guy who's going to, you know, need a win over to MJF. And he's won all the stuff in the build-up. I think it was a good decision to have him beat Wardlow. The moonsault looked great, and, you know, Wardlow didn't really lose in because it's not like he's a built-up guy who has won loads of matches. So it works. And then we're both in agreement that Jericho is going to retain the AEW title. So,
Cody is not going to be the one to derail the MJF locomotive.
No, he's the one that started it. So,
he's going to be there putting coal in it, you know, eating it up.
Now, before we talk about Raw, we will talk about SmackDown a little bit. There's not really a lot from SmackDown to discuss. I mean, obviously, the Goldberg-Wyatt thing is the big story. They main-evented the show where Goldberg came out and cut a promo, and the Firefly Funhouse interrupted him. And then they had, you know, the Fiend turn up behind Goldberg, and Goldberg kind of called that he was going to be behind him, and he speared Wyatt, and Wyatt kind of got up from it pretty much straight away and growled at Goldberg, and as Goldberg was going to do something again, the lights went out, and why it was gone. So this reminds me of a lot of matches from the past, years ago, where they would book a match and you would go, how did they get out of this one?
Yeah. They booked themselves in the corner. That's the cliche that people use, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Ryback and CM Punk. And
we need more cliches in wrestling, Kenny.
There's not enough of them.
And also on Twitter, more faux outrage. There's not enough of that.
Yeah, I think there should be more faux outrage.
When it comes to tea bags, did you see that Twitter storm about the Yorkshire tea?
No, what happened?
Oh, I'm not going to get into it because it could end up being political, Kenny, and we should not talk about
politics. How is a tea bag political?
Well, the new Chancellor of the Exchequer posted a picture of himself making a cup of tea from Yorkshire tea. There's a big bag of Yorkshire tea bags in the background.
Uh-huh.
So he put this out there and all these people were saying, I'm never buying Yorkshire tea again. I'm never buying it again because you endorsed the Conservative Party.
Oh, God.
Yorkshire tea had no idea that this was going to happen. They had no involvement in it. And apparently back in 2017, I think it was a prominent member of the Labour Party did with Yorkshire tea. And those people were not complaining then. But yeah, it's just that fake outrage about anything. So anyway, let's get back to Goldberg. Stop talking about Yorkshire tea.
Well, you know, I'm never having Yorkshire tea ever again. Anyway, who cares? But no, it's the Goldberg Wyatt segment. I actually thought the segment was pretty good. But the thing is, it's good if it's setting it up to Wyatt beating him. But I have a feeling... I think Goldberg is beating The Fiend and winning the title. I think that's where we're going here. And that's my gut.
I mean, could that then lead to a rematch at Elimination Chamber, do you think? With The Fiend regaining the title?
I mean, I'm somebody who's said for a long time, and I know we've talked to this before, I actually don't have a problem with a little caretaker reign for a week. Like those, you know, we talked about this before. We said, you know, if last year, what if Finn Balor had dethroned Lesnar and then Lesnar won it back the next month or something? I don't think those things are particularly bad and they don't really do them anymore. So I think it would be even more shocking. I mean, I think that
the Balor one would have been tremendous for Balor, would have been huge for him. And he's a full time guy that's sticking around, and WWE as a company benefits from his advancement, as does everyone who wrestles him. But my point here with Goldberg, how does Goldberg get from beating The Fiend? I just don't see how he becomes a bigger star as a result of that match. And like we saw what happened with Kevin Owens, didn't we, when Goldberg beat him? Kevin Owens never really recovered from that. And if Goldberg, I mean, Goldberg was just laughed it off. He was in the ring, you know, on the big screen, did a Firefly Flanell segment, which was a lot of fun. Then the lights went out, came back on, and we got close up of Goldberg. He's got the mic, and he's like, The Fiend's right behind me, and he's laughing. Then he turns around, nails The Fiend with a spear, and then Fiend disappears under cover of darkness, and Goldberg's laughing again. And it's like it just seems so effortless for him to take The Fiend out. So if this then leads to Goldberg defeating The Fiend at Super down, I think Fiend's in a lot of trouble. And then how did he get the belt back into circulation? Does Goldberg drop it to Roman Reigns? Possibly. And maybe Roman Reigns benefits from wrestling Goldberg, but you've also got the potential of that match being a bit of a disaster. Goldberg's not somebody who can do long matches, we know this. And if Roman Reigns is at WrestleMania, they'll probably be inclined to put him on for at least 8 minutes. And that's probably like 5 or 6 minutes too long for Goldberg these days. So I think the really WWE is playing a dangerous game here. And especially if Fiend loses, you know, we spent, what is it, 10? We're coming up to 11 months since this character was introduced. And they spent a long time building it up. And they've sacrificed a lot of people to get him to where he is now. And then you're just going to then flush that all down the toilet because in a match with Goldberg, I'm just not getting it at all here. And it's hard for me to imagine that Goldberg would come back to lose to The Fiend. But you know what? If he does, then, you know, I'm going to be saying things. My mood will be very different this time next week. We're going to be doing Super Showdown on the Overrun, aren't we, Kenny, this week?
Yeah, this Friday. sometimes there is good stories that can come out of loss, but it's just you have to tell those stories. You have to tell them pretty well. Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued, but
I mean, it's the no selling from Goldberg that troubles me. It's just no selled this character that all these full time players have been terrified of.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the problem you have sometimes when you bring these older guys back is that, you know, there really should be writers and, or people backstage saying to them, you need to be selling this. Like, you're an actor, essentially, and you're being paid to do a job. You're being paid to portray a character and portray a role. So if you know if Meryl Streep comes in to do, I don't know, what
a segment with Lana.
A segment with Lana. No, but like if Meryl Streep, we'll talk about the post since you love that movie so much with her and Tom Hanks. But like, if Meryl Streep's playing the woman who ran the Post, the Washington Post, and yeah, you know the scene that she's supposed to be doing is her confronting the guy that she's been friends with for months, who was in on the cover up all along. Now Meryl Streep, as good as she is, she's not going to go in and laugh through the segment, right? She's not going to like. She's going to do what's on the page. She might go, well, look, I think that this is the way I should do it. But, like, she's going to do what the character's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So, to me, the problem is, why are people not telling Goldberg what to do? Because he's being paid a lot of money, and he's being paid a lot of money to do a certain job. So, I think while Goldberg should be selling more, they should be telling him to sell more. They should be telling him to do a lot more than they did, and that's on them. And, again, you know, the thing is, sometimes it feels like they push someone and then they push them for a while and then they think that that push means that they'll just forever be remembered as a top guy. That's not what happens.
No.
Austin had to beat people for years continuously to be cemented as a top guy. So did The Rock. He had to be in top segments and get over all the time. You can't just do it for 6 months and then stop. So I don't know what they do coming out of it. I know we've got John Cena on this Friday night SmackDown. So I think by the time we get to sort of, you know, the weekend, we're going to know where everything is and know how we feel about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we should just mention, you know, Goldberg's a veteran, but look at the other veterans who have looked at the lights or looked at the red lights for The Fiend. I mean, Kane, I mean, Mick Foley, Jerry Lawler, all these guys have gone into this with one goal, and that is to make The Fiend look indestructible, and they've allowed themselves to be humbled in the process. And Goldberg is the exception to that. I mean, even Hogan on last week's SmackDown, you know, I think he struggled a little bit how to react, but he was still selling. He wasn't laughing about it. His reaction to The Fiend was very different from Goldberg's. So it was as if he got the brief and he grasped what he was supposed to do, but Goldberg didn't. I mean, we'll see what happens at Super Showdown, Kenny. I mean, I just hope that Goldberg doesn't win that title. I really do.
We will be covering it on Friday, so join us on Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes to hear what we think about Super Showdown and all the matches that happened. Speaking of Super Showdown, it was the go-home episode of Monday Night Raw for Super Showdown to see where we're going to be. We had a lot happening on the show. We had Kevin Owens and Randy Orton as the main event set up in the opening segment. We had Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy in matches with the Street Profits. And we had a women's contract signing for the Elimination Chamber. What did you make of Raw, and what segment stood out to you?
I enjoyed the opening segment with Randy Orton. You know, they recapped the attack again. Didn't really give Matt Hardy much play. And happily, he did not come out. Randy Orton came out and did his speech, you know.
Can you imagine if he came out in that match? You'd have been tearing your hair out, Finn.
So it does feel like, you know, Matt has been written out of the storyline. He was mentioned a few times, but the announcers didn't really seem that concerned about his welfare, because the story, of course, is Edge. And as we were told later on the program, Beth Phoenix will be on next week's Raw to give us an update on Edge Adams' condition, and probably...
Do you think she's going to get RKO'd, kissed and punted?
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether Randy's allowed to do that these days, because things have
changed. Imagine the nuclear heat if he concertoed... I mean, he won't do it, but can you imagine if he concertoed Beth Phoenix? Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, Randy's obviously going to come out and confront her, and that does have the potential to be huge. And I like the way that the you know, we're going to be in March next week. So Edge isn't going to be there next week. So I think the earliest we're going to see Edge will be...
Well, he is actually advertised locally for the March 9th Raw.
Okay.
Which is the night after the Elimination Chamber. So it does kind of tie in with the Beth segment for the March 2nd episode.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's the earliest we're going to see him. So they've done a really good job. I mean, that's, what's that, 6 weeks between the attack and that appearance? Is that, yeah, 6 weeks, I think it is, isn't it?
I think it's 4 weeks. Because we were...
The night after Raw Rumble.
It was the 26th of January. So I think it's 4 weeks, because we're now on the 25th of February.
I mean when Edge returns.
Oh, yeah. Six weeks, yeah.
So it'll be 6 weeks between the big attack and his return, which I think they've done a really good job spinning that out and keeping the storyline interesting.
And I think Beth's actually... I was thinking it was going to be Christian, but I actually think Beth is the best person to be as the last thing before Edge comes back. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, I think it is as well. I mean, I'm sure she'll be up for doing whatever is asked. It'll be interesting to see how far they push it. Be interesting to see how far they go. But I mean, I thought Autumn was pretty good on this week's episode of Raw. You know, he came out and said to the audience, "What I did to Edge, I don't expect you to understand. As a matter of fact, I know from the bottom of my heart that none of you could ever understand why I did what I did." And then he said, you know, "But what I did, I am very sorry for. I am truly sorry from the bottom of my heart." So he's never explained why he did it. He said he's sorry, but no one believes he is sorry. He seems very troubled by his actions. You know, he said, I think he mentioned that he was his emotions had become unbalanced throughout this whole saga. And then Kevin Owens came out, said he didn't think Orton's apology was sincere, wanted to know why he did it. Then when Orton didn't really respond, challenged him to a match, and then that ended up closing the show. So I thought they did a good job setting things up there and made Owens well and made Owens seem like Orton's equal because he wasn't destroyed like Matt Hardy was. So I thought it was an interesting start to the show. What did you think to the opening segment, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good. I thought Kevin Owens coming out in Winnipeg made sense. The crowd were very happy to see him. There was a brief moment where they were chatting Y2J, so you really wanted to get someone Canadian out there, and it played in. And it was nice to see Kevin Owens kind of step away from the Seth Rollins thing for a little bit. And then I thought the main event was really good. And I actually thought the ending to the show, just kind of if we're talking about Orton and Owens,
yes.
Is the ending to the show with the, you know, Seth Rollins and Murphy and the squad kind of at ringside. And actually my other half, Steve Gunn, had a great line because the Viking Raiders came out and I said, "Oh, have you ever been less enthusiastic about a tag team in your life?" And he said, "The Viking Raiders suck so much motivation out of me when they come on the screen that I no longer want to watch Raw." Yeah. Followed up by, he said, and he meant and said, "I think that the Ascension would be better in this role."
Wow. Well, the Ascension were a lot of fun when they were doing the stuff with Tyler Breeze and Fandango. I mean, yes. At least they were entertaining. When was that? Was that 2017?
17, yeah, yeah.
17, summer of 17, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least they were a barrel of laughs back then. I mean, Viking Raiders, I mean, when was the last time they raised a smile?
Oh, no, nothing. But at the end, once, you know, the Viking Raiders and the AOP had all kind of ran away and it came down to, you know, Randy Orton and Kevin Owens, and they did the whole, there was a referee who did a fast count and ended up that he was a disciple of Seth Rollins and he had a Messiah t-shirt underneath, and they teased Orton doing the concerto with Seth Rollins saying, "Listen to the voices, Randy, listen to the voices." And then Owens gets the chair and he's standing up to Orton and he doesn't get concertoed, and I'm not going to lie, if he'd been concertoed, March 20th would have been a bit more of a stress for me, because would he have had a neck brace on? And the show ends with Kevin Owens battering this referee. I just thought, this is how a babyface should be. They should be able to overcome the odds and stand tall, and at the end of it, Randy Orton was a prick and you still felt compelled to see Owens versus Rollins. So I thought they did a really good job with that.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way it ended with the fast count, and like no one really knew what happened. Randy Orton looked at the referee, it's like, "Was that the finish?" And then I thought the referee was really good as well. And he's like, he sort of said something to Orton, you're thinking, well, has something gone wrong? And then Seth Rollins at ringside, he's getting confused, and then the referee then took the chair off. That was it. So Rollins shoved the chairs into the ring, did Orton to give Owens the concerto, but then Owens got hold of one of the chairs, didn't he? And they were going to nail each other with the chairs. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the referee disarmed Kevin Owens, and at that point we knew that it was not a mistake and it was a rogue referee. And then Owens throws him into the ring. Orton leaves. Rollins then walks up the ramp. Owens shoves the referee in the ring, rips his jersey off. He's got a Seth Rollins t-shirt on, realizes what's going on. The announcers were very helpful at this point to us, the viewers. Oh, look, it's a Seth Rollins disciple. So that was quite... And then Owens nails him with a stunner, brings a table into the ring, power bombs him through the table. Rollins is watching from the ramp, saying, this guy's got nothing to do with me. I mean, we know Rollins has got no credibility when it comes to these things. He's lied many times previously. But it was quite an interesting way to end the show. Orton got the win. Owens lost, but it was a tainted loss, so it doesn't really harm him. I don't think he's really tarnished by the nature of the loss was such that it was not, you know, a bona fide loss. And it keeps the Owens and Seth Rollins thing going as well. So I thought it ticked a lot of boxes, actually. I thought it was very well done. Didn't think the match was very good. I thought the match was decidedly average, if I'm honest.
Yeah, the match was average, but all the bells and whistles surrounding it were really good. I should mention that the referee is Jake Clemons, C-L-E-M-O-N-S, and he's on Twitter. He's an Evolve referee, who I thought did a really good job for coming in and doing that kind of big angle in the main event of Raw, and good for him.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought that was very well done.
I also was a big fan. I actually really enjoyed the contract signing for the Women's Elimination Chamber. The bit that cracked me up, I don't think it's supposed to crack me up. So to set the scene here, Jerry Lawler's presiding. He got everybody's name right, Finn. That's a great start.
He was struggling a little bit, though, wasn't he? He was tripping over his words a little bit there at the start. We've all done that. You and I, Kenny, we've done that enough times.
Couple of times, yeah. But yeah, he was stumbling a little bit, but he got in it. So basically what happened, we've got the five women, bar Shayna Baszler, are out there. Asuka takes the microphone. She's just disgusted that Shayna Baszler's not there. I mean, Asuka cuts these great promos. Most of it's in Japanese, but she's just got so much energy and charisma that you just could listen to her all day. She's not happy that Shayna Baszler isn't there. So she's screaming. We've got Liv Morgan getting up from her chair and going over to Ruby Riott to sign it in front of her, making sure Ruby Riott signs it first. But my favourite bit was Sarah Logan, when Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott are facing off, right? And Liv Morgan's left her area. She's in front of everything. She's disrupting the proceedings. We've already had Asuka screaming at Jerry Lawler. Sarah Logan slightly moves in her chair and Jerry Lawler goes, whoa, Sarah, hold on. Come on now.
And
be professional, Sarah. I was dead. It was so funny. Poor Sarah Logan, who had nothing in this segment, and she tried to just kind of, you know, have a wee bit of involvement by seeming torn between her two former partners, and Jerry Lawler just shut her down immediately. I was cackling.
I mean, she's a total non-entity. You know, she's trying to, you know, how about some attention on me? You know, give me some screen time. And Jerry Lawler's just shutting her right down.
Calm down, Sarah. Professionalism. Here, come on. It's all about you. But I actually thought that, you know, when Baszler came out and stuff, you know, to me, they set up a bunch of stuff. They furthered Natalya and Asuka, who are obviously kind of feuding. And I think that tells us that we maybe are going to see Divas of Doom and Kabuki Warriors at WrestleMania. We had a big tease for Shayna Baszler and Asuka, who I assume are going to be the final two left in the chamber. And I think that's a real big match and big face-off that you want to see. Yeah. They teased the undercard thing of Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott. And they also had Becky come out to brawl with Shayna. So I thought they ticked a lot of boxes. And, you know, for a lot of times these contract signings are really mundane and dull. But I actually thought this one was really effective.
Yeah, I mean, it was good as well, the way that they made Shayna Baszler. I mean, we know Shayna Baszler is the star of the match, but she was very much framed that way by coming out last as the other five women were there, and they were complaining about it, and they were upset about it, or at least Asuka was. I mean, You know, Sarah Logan didn't say much. I mean, had she said something, I'd dread to think what Jerry Lawler would have said.
Very unprofessional from Sarah Logan. Pipe down.
That's it. 30-day suspension. So Shayna comes through and, you know, she's like, she runs the show. You know, she's the big star, even though she's on Netflix. Sorry, Netflix. She's on NXT.
Netflix.
Well, I've got something Netflix on the screen right now. There's something when we began this podcast, we were talking about that question, the question about the over top streaming service. Uh-huh. I don't think I really answered the question properly. So I need to mention something about that after we finish the Raw review. So okay. Sorry, just had Netflix on my mind there. So yeah, Shayna comes out. Then there's all this aggro. There's officials out there. The ring's cleared and Becky comes out in a Bruce Lee Game of Death top, takes Shayna down, and they didn't fight for too long, which I thought was very well done. Don't give too much away. But the thing I liked about it the most, the Becky Lynch and Shayna Baszler interaction, was that it was very enthusiastically received by the audience. So you're right, this was a segment that sort of didn't start. It started off a little bit clumsy, and parts of it, as you say, were just nonsensical and absurd, but it was very entertaining in its own way and set lots of things up, which is what, you know, it's what a segment with lots of people in it should always do. That otherwise you've kind of squandered its potential, haven't you?
Yeah, 100%. The other thing I want to ask you about Raw, though, before we move on to for you to take us home with the Netflix over-the-top service stuff is, I don't know if you'll say it this way, but you text me earlier on with one word to describe the build of Brock Lesnar and Ricochet Super Showdown, and I wondered if you could fill in the lovely listeners with what the one word is that you would describe the build.
Well, it's a word that I've tacked on the name of an Oscar-winning actor whose first name is Tom. So, no, it was
like Hilary Swank, but without the S.
Yeah. So it's just Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman came out. Heyman had a tremendous promo there, didn't he? He was just like bursting the bubble on Ricochet's chances of defeating Brock Lesnar at Super Showdown. And, you know, it's a real promo that he gave, and Lesnar looked like he was interested and he was having fun out there. So they were talking up the Super Showdown match, or at least talking it down, at least talking down Ricochet's chances. Then Heyman brought up the WrestleMania match, and obviously if Ricochet defeated Lesnar, then it would be Ricochet would go on to defend against Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania. Can you imagine that, Kenny? Can you imagine
Drew
that?
Drew McIntyre versus Ricochet. I mean, no offense to Ricochet, but my God. I mean, I will say, I think for Ricochet, and this isn't for fans and for us, I just don't think it really matters. But like, if you're Ricochet, he's going to see this as a huge thing that he gets to have a match with Brock Lesnar. That's going to be such a bucket list moment for him in pro wrestling. That, you know, he's a guy that committed to WWE. People had written him off as being a guy that WWE would never hire, and now here he is in a match with Brock Lesnar on a pay-per-view, which is great for him. But the problem is that I would be willing to bet, like, every penny I have. Like, I would put every penny I have in a bank and bet you it that Ricochet does not leave Saudi Arabia as the WWE champion. And the fact that I don't even have a percent of doubt tells you the build has not been successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's if they allow him to leave Saudi Arabia. Last time they were there was a few problems getting out, right?
Well, apparently WrestleVotes had said today that last time WWE had told the crew that they will try and find alternative arrangements rather than flying Atlas Air, which is where the airline they flew the last time. But I can confirm that last night they flew Atlas Air to Saudi Arabia, so same as before.
But I mean, you know, he had a match with Luke Gallows earlier on the program, and you know, it was a good match. We know Ricochet is a tremendous in-ring performer.
But I mean, it was fine.
It wasn't any worse
than the main event.
Yeah, it was a competent. What I mean was, it was a professional match, very capable. You know, very well put together. It was not a match that anyone's going to remember. Well, probably anyone who watched it last night probably doesn't remember it today. We know Ricochet won, but it just feels like his confidence level should be through the roof right now. I mean, he should be like oozing personality and oozing swagger and all these things, you know, all these intangible qualities should be turned up to 10 or even 11. You know, he should be there right now because, as you say, this is the biggest match of his career. He's facing Brock Lesnar on a major show in Saudi Arabia. But he just sort of feels like no one believed he was going to win. Paul Heyman told me in the promo that he wasn't going to win. But what got me about the Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman promo, the forecast of these big victories that Lesnar's going to achieve, why the hell didn't Ricochet come out there and interrupt them? Where was, I mean, I just written here in my notes, where was Ricochet?
Well, I mean, the whole thing's problematic because, like, if you're facing Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, like, look at the example. Drew McIntyre is facing Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, so he was able to dispose of Anderson and Gallows in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It took Ricochet a fair amount of effort to just beat Luke Gallows. So if it takes you a while to beat Luke Gallows, how am I meant to believe you've even got a chance against Brock Lesnar? And then, yeah, the other thing is, the Brock Lesnar segment followed the Ricochet match, and Heyman was shown backstage. So, like, I mean, I know you're not supposed to think about this, it's behind the fourth wall, but, like, wouldn't they be, like, right behind the curtain to go out next? So, like, are we meant to believe that Ricochet just came back and, like, walked past them and just didn't? Like, it just makes him look like a bit of a wet blanket.
Well, it does. The low blow at the Royal Rumble and kind of set up the elimination, but I mean, Drew got all the glory for that when he hit the Claymore, didn't he? He sent Lesnar to over the top rope to the so Ricochet did have a little bit of revenge because he'd been beaten up by Lesnar on Raw previously. But he doesn't, you know, to me, this moment here where, you know, you go back to the setup for the Rey Mysterio Brock Lesnar match at Survivor Series, wasn't it? Where Mysterio's coming at Lesnar with the equalizer, with a chair, beating the hell out of him. And maybe you couldn't do that because that would be too similar to what they did with Rey and Brock Lesnar. But they could have done something like that, where Ricochet was at least allowed to stand tall and knock Lesnar over. And none of that's happened. So I'm hoping that for sure down, Lesnar really has his working shoes on and goes in there and really gives Ricochet something. Because that's the only way that this can be remembered as any success, is if he allows Ricochet to shine in the match. I hope it's not like an absolute drubbing, because that to me would be, I mean, you know, we're all disappointed by the promotion for this match. So the only way it can be salvaged is if the match itself is exciting. Hopefully they'll give us that at Super Showdown.
Well, we will be talking about Super Showdown on Friday on the Overrun and Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. But before we leave you, Finn, you wanted to just hammer home a point about, or clarify a point about the over-the-top streaming service thing. So take it away.
Yeah, I was just, what I was going to say earlier was about, say they enter into an agreement with Netflix, right? Netflix currently has got 167 million subscribers. So if they come up with a deal with Netflix to allow Netflix to show WWE pay-per-views, or at least WrestleMania, maybe not all of them, but say WrestleMania, you're going to be hitting tons of new people who aren't currently subscribers to the WWE network. So you've got to kind of weigh that one up. Because you're hitting such a huge audience, people who may not currently be fans of WWE and otherwise wouldn't watch WrestleMania, they may then watch it on Netflix and think, wow, this wrestling's great. This WWE is tremendous. I'm going to sign up for the WWE network. So I can see the potential in that. But to take WWE pay-per-views and especially WrestleMania off the network, I think could be devastating for the network subs. So it's really weighing up, you know, the risks versus the rewards there. Of if you go into a deal with another streaming service, are you gonna, you'll get paid for your content there, but will the revenue you derive from entering into a deal with, say, Netflix, would that be greater than the revenue you're gonna lose from people who may unsubscribe from the WWE network because they're only really subscribing for these big events? If they can get them on Netflix, which they're already subscribers to, why would they subscribe to the WWE network? Also, you've got an image problem as well with shareholders and the public generally. If your subscriber numbers collapse after you enter into a deal with another streaming service, that looks really bad, doesn't it, Kenny?
It doesn't look great. I mean, I think there is a big upside to doing it on another platform. But what you'd have to do is, you know, you talked earlier on about, you know, if Cena comes back and Cena has a match at WrestleMania, and he wins a big match at WrestleMania, why are you going to want to watch in 8 days? Because he's not there anymore.
Mm.
But I think that the impetus, if they're going to do something on a streaming over the top thing, is they need to put on big cards that mean a lot, that showcase new talent, and that make you go, after you've watched WrestleMania on ESPN Plus or whatever, go, God, that was really good. I'd like to see more of that. Maybe I should sign up for the network as well. Like,
yes.
It needs to be something that makes you want to get the next thing. Because, like, I remember in 1998 or 1997, like, I always wanted to see what Austin was going to do next every single week. So I couldn't miss it. I couldn't miss what Austin was going to do. So they need to have a few people who are can't miss. I mean, even AEW, when you look at AEW every week, everybody's tuning in to see what Cody's going to do next, what Jericho's going to do next. Like, people want to see their segments, and they need to have people in big matches who are either winning or in stories that are going to make you, if you see it on another platform, go, I really like that guy or girl, and I need to see what they're going to do next.
Yeah, it's going to have a purpose. And if you're there, your whole idea of entering a deal with another service is that, okay, you might lose money on this end, but we're going to recoup that money from potential new subscribers who don't currently watch our product or might not even be aware of it. And having exposed our product to them through this much larger market share, through this service that's got tens or even over 100 million subscribers, if it's Netflix, we could then get our network subscribers up, and all these new people might discover us.
So, well, I mean, that's the key, because when you look at the debut edition of SmackDown that happened in October, they didn't do anything on that show to make you want to keep watching SmackDown. They started off with, what, 4 million viewers? 3.9, yeah. Something like that. And they've never hit anywhere close because nobody came back. And if you look
if you look at it, Kenny, it's because they were reliant on part-timers who weren't there next week.
But do you remember an example of how to do it, and it actually involves The Rock, funnily enough, was one of the best things they ever done was that Raw 1000 show in July of 2012, and they had, yes, CM Punk turn heel at the end of the episode. Because he turned heel on The Rock, they used The Rock in an angle to set up your biggest guy, or one of your biggest guys, turning heel. And that meant that you had to tune in and see what CM Punk was going to do, because he was one of the biggest stars in the show. You need to do big angles like that when you have the big audience, so that they will then want to tune in and see what's going to happen next.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that is theoretically why you spend the big money on these outside stars, these sports personalities or these celebrities or whomever, is that you bring them in and you use them to try and get your full-timers over. I mean, you know, this is, you go back to WrestleMania 1 with Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper and all those other people. The whole idea of that was to get more attention on Hulk Hogan and the rest of the crew, because they were the ones who were going to, obviously Mr. T stuck around for ages. And far outstayed his welcome, actually. But that was the whole idea, was to get over, to get the full-time regular wrestlers over and make them mainstream stars, which did work to an extent. And just in conclusion, WrestleMania 14, Mike Tyson was brought in, paid 3.5, you know, from the Royal Rumble through to Mania. And the whole goal of that was to get Austin over, and they achieved that spectacularly. But the whole purpose of that was not about making Mike Tyson into a star or getting your mainstream media, which of course Tyson did, but it was all about getting over your guy who was going to be there 8 days after WrestleMania.
There you go. Well, listen, let us know what you think on social media at Finlay Martin and Kenny MC 1985. Do you agree? What do you think about the stuff that we've talked about today? What do you want to see at WrestleMania? Do you think part-timers still have value? Do you not? We'd like to hear what you think. So tweet us and let us know. Finn, have you got any plugs for us?
No, just the Jim Ross interview over on Patreon. I mean, hopefully you can check that out. I think people will really enjoy that. That's the only thing I've got to plug this week.
And you can, the only two plugs I've got for you are patreon.com/insidetheropes. You can get this podcast 24 hours early. You can also get the Overrun, where we talk about other stuff. We review old issues of Power Slam. You can get the Jim Ross interview. You can get loads of different stuff on there, and it really does help. We are an independent podcast. We do not have sponsors. We don't have people who are able to contribute. We are independent, so all help on Patreon really does make a difference. So if you are able to and can chuck us something, you can always head over there and do that. And you can also go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for more interview content, audio, video-wise, sorry. An interview with Paige just went up about her talking about a potential CM Punk return and her managing Nia Jax one day, something she talks about. And I'm going to lie and just give a third plug, insidetheropes.co.uk/KO for tickets to Kevin Owens in Glasgow. We've been working on this for months and months and months, and we hope that you guys will take a chance and join us, and hopefully this will be the beginning of a lot of one-night-only shows with WWE superstars that you want to see and that we don't get a chance to see in this kind of environment. That was a mouthful, wasn't it? Anyway.
It certainly was.
It's Pancake Day today on Tuesday. Happy Pancake Day.
Yeah, are you all prepared, Kenny?
Well, I've had pancakes today already. I had pancakes for lunch today at a very nice place in the West End called Urban West. I'm going to get you and your lovely other half to check out the next time you're up in Glasgow. It's very nice.
Fantastic. I mean, I went to Aldi yesterday and got some flour for 45p, so I'm going to make them myself tonight. Excellent. Skybox Kenny all over, isn't it?
Skybox Kenny. Coming from Mansion Finn. Anyway, join us on Friday's Super Showdown. Finn's either going to be going insane at the Goldberg winning or praising Goldberg for his loss. Either way, it'll be funny.
That's it, yeah. We will speak to you then.
Take care, everybody. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.